Welcome back to another episode of The Textual Talk. Our guest today is none other than the spectacular Jackie McDougal. Jackie's journey is anything but ordinary, from becoming a mother at 16 to forging a successful career in the tech industry. She shares her experiences, challenges, and triumphs. We delve into her day-to-day responsibilities, handling everything from user lockouts to major system projects and her work in two-week sprints to align tech initiatives with business goals. Jackie also offers practical advice and resources for aspiring Salesforce professionals, highlighting the vibrant and supportive Salesforce community known as Ohana. But it's not all about tech. Jackie's story is rich with personal anecdotes about overcoming stereotypes, the importance of mentorship, and the emotional highs and lows of balancing work and family life. She reflects on the significance of aligning job satisfaction with financial growth, the impacts of workplace dynamics, and diversity in the tech industry. Join us as Jackie McDougal, affectionately known as JD, shares her remarkable journey, valuable insights, and a sneak peek into her future projects. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and tune in to The Textual Talk for more engaging episodes. Now, on to the episode. This video is being sponsored by Textual Consulting. Are you still struggling to get into cybersecurity? Are you not getting interviews? Do you have a bad resume? Or is it all of the above? Well, if that's you, then we got you covered at Textual Consulting. My name is Henry Davis. I'm a career coach and a cybersecurity professional, and I've helped hundreds, maybe even thousands of people get into cybersecurity with my coaching and my content that you've seen in various places. Now, I specialize in specifically getting people in the blue team. That'll be incident response or SOC analysts. I can cover everything from your entry level to your medium to your advanced skills and really help you outperform your resume. You don't believe me? Check out some of these testimonials that I've had from recent clients. So if you're interested, click the link in my bio, textualconsulting.com/offerings, to see what offerings that we have available for you. Now, back to the show. All right. Welcome back to the Textual Talk. I'm your host, HD, and we got a lovely guest for you guys today. Her name is Jackie McDougal, aka Jermaine Dupree. That's what we're gonna call her today. JD. Okay. And she's come in to kick it with us. For those of you that are like on Patreon, or if I decide to even keep the earlier conversation in the podcast, we actually just been having some great conversation. I think it's going to get any better. Now, before we get into the episode, you know what to do. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, leave us a review, follow the podcast, share us out. It really helps out the metrics. And if you're watching on YouTube, subscribe, bell icon, hit all the notification buttons so you can be notified we're dropping all content. Now, guys, it's really no real backstory here, guys. Honest to God, truth, Jackie had a tweet that I saw on Twitter about, I can't remember what she was talking about at the time about in tech. I may try to find it while she's talking or she starts introducing herself. But I was like, this is going to be an interesting episode. Because people always ask me, hey, how do you find your guests? I was like, I find them everywhere. Like, I'm not doing the typical, this is what I realized. I'm talking to my audience. I'm looking directly at y'all. I've realized y'all don't care who on here. Y'all just want to hear a good conversation. Because I've had some people that have sometimes bigger followings, like on YouTube or whatever. And sometimes that don't resonate over, as in people who don't have no following, but the conversation is great. So that's what we're going for. We're going for interesting stories of interesting people that work in tech. So that's what we're doing today. But JD, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Thanks for having me, and I'm excited to be here. And you got to remind me what I tweeted. I think I have an idea, but yeah, I'm excited to be here and to chat with you.
Let me see. Oh yeah, Mac and Ash Jack. What did I say to you? This is, yeah, August 7th. Your story sounds interesting. I think I'll be something my audience would be interested in. So now I got to go back to August 7th or see what you was talking about.
Oh, look at my phone coming back up.
Let me see if I can find it. I'm laughing at
some of the tweets. I just hope it shouldn't be. I was going to say, listen, I'm over here like, now he's going to have to go through.
I can't remember what you said.
See?
Let me see. I'm going to try to search one thing. If I don't find that. Okay, there you go. I think I found it.
Okay. I'm over here trying to think.
Yeah, okay. I think this is exactly it, because this came on August 7th. They said, I was a teenage mother. I had my son at 16. Both my parents were educated. I thought I had really messed my life up, but I'm getting paid more than I ever thought I'd be paid, doing stuff I love to do. Every day you get the option to show up and show out or just BS. And then I think that's when I clicked on your profile and said, oh, okay, she in tech doing something. And so that's when it led to the DMs.
Yes.
So yeah, with that kind of introduction, let's segue into who you are. As long as you want to get, that's what we do around here.
Okay. Shoot, I'll just expand on the tweet because I think that'll give you some good context to where I came from and how I got here.
Hey, I just thought about maybe the intro to this pod being like, so maybe you're wondering how I got here. Like they do in the videos, the movies. Like,
yeah, listen, I definitely very much identify with that type of opening. I feel like for the trailer of my life, if I had a docuseries, that would definitely kick it off pretty well, because I feel like I went on a little bit of a rocket ship ride with just the ups and the downs of how I got here, which isn't even... Anyways, we'll start. So like I said, I had my son when I was 16. Definitely was not planned. My father and I rose to the occasion, and I was a young mother. Both my parents, like I said, were educated. My mom went to Berkeley. My dad went to Oberlin. I definitely did not think that I was going to go down that road. In fact, once I had my son, I was actually supposed to go on to this internship or like this kind of like high school program and study abroad, but I didn't get to do that. And I don't know if you want me to even tell the story.
If you're comfortable with it, my audience, I tell people this all the time. My show not for everybody. It's for certain people that want to rock with it. And I feel like as long as one person, like we connect with one person and it's helped them on their journey, that's what we do. So I'm like, if you're comfortable with telling it, by all means, this story goes as far as you want to take it.
Okay. I'm just going to give a little glimpse just because it's kind of part of how and the motivation that I have to even get to this point. But I was a young mother. Both my parents were busy living their life, doing their things, trying to take care of us. And when I got pregnant, I did not tell anyone. By the time my parents did find out I was going into labor, I'm sure everyone's going to be like, how'd you do that? I'm going to write a book. I want people to know that, because I find this to be just like the catalyst, like the fuel to my fire and how I kicked everything off. But I say all that to say is that after that point, I had to figure out what I wanted to do, because I didn't want to be a stereotype. You know what I mean? That was never the plan. It was always to go to college. It was always to try to make my parents proud. But I came out the gate a little bit rough. And so it was quickly like, what am I going to do? And I could have went to college and at that point, but I felt bad like putting the burden on my dad to like have to supplement me those four years. So I went the work route. I went and got a job being an administrative assistant and just took my time figuring out what I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to be a teacher. I thought I wanted to be a nurse. I started nursing school and very quickly realized that my stomach is not set up for that. It's just not. And to be a teacher, you have to have a certain amount of like emotional capacity. And I'd be bringing people's kids home if I was a teacher, because you're taking care of kids. You're trying to make sure they succeed. My dad's a DBA and he always told me to go into computers. And so by the time I had run through all those different kind of options, I had landed a marketing associate job and they had Salesforce, and I got really good at writing reports, and I had 30 field reps that I would support. And so they realized that I was really good with Salesforce and they wanted the reps to take on more responsibility and all that stuff. So I started doing L&D. So learning and development, and I would train the reps. And from there, it just snowballed into just Salesforce. That company downsized. And because I like Salesforce so much, I started looking for more opportunities to do Salesforce, even though I wasn't certified. So my next job was a project management job, and they didn't have a really good platform to manage their complex process of campaign finance. And so I got the job, got a budget, did my first implementation, and it was just like, I love it. Like, I want to do more of it. How do I get more of this? The election year was up. I found myself again not getting to do Salesforce, so I left. And from there, again, downsized. And I was like, okay, you can't keep doing this. You need to do this for real. Let me go get certified. So that's what I did. Had a lot of crazy life stuff go on during that time. I mean, my daughter's father broke up and I literally was like on unemployment in this certification course. That was 13 weeks. That was how long my unemployment was. And I had this fellowship at the end with this consulting firm for a month and a half. And so at the end of that month and a half, my unemployment was going to be up. So I needed to have a job. I had to do something. Last day, didn't have an offer. And I was sitting there, what are we going to do, Sky Daddy? And by 6 o'clock, I had two offers. I had one from the consulting company, and then I had one from an ad tech company that I ended up working for. And ever since then, it's just been a rocket ship ride in startups. And I was a junior Salesforce administrator after I got certified, and I started with that ad tech startup company. And now I'm senior Salesforce administrator for a BI company.
Yeah. Nice, nice. So we'll do this first for the listeners, for the watchers. It's been a minute since I've had somebody it's probably been 2 years or something since I had somebody that's actually did what you do in Salesforce. Could you give them a simple explanation of what Salesforce is?
Yeah. Salesforce is a CRM tool. And essentially you can think about it like my old boss would compare it to a Google sheet. Think about it like that. You're just capturing data, but it's in a very nice UI. Think of it like an Amazon for business. You can type in, look for clients, look for deals. It's a database. And so Salesforce has many different clouds, different niche products, things like that, that you can have specialties in. I'm certified in Sales Cloud, but I have experience across multiple clouds. And essentially, I manage their Salesforce instance. Anything that touches Salesforce integrations, it can be as simple as, hey, I need a new field, or it can be as complex as implementing new like lead to cash process. You know what I mean? I get a little bit of everything. No one day is the same. I don't know if that kind of says enough, because I think a lot of people wonder what we do. And it's really hard to explain because I'm also a BA and a PM. And then I also build in the system, and it can be something lighter. It could be code and flows and things like that to make the business work more efficiently. So it's an interesting position.
Got it. You know, we'll definitely get there. It seems like you had a lot of interesting things going on in your career. So I want to say, so you got into Salesforce roughly in 2017, right?
Yes. Yes, I had been doing it since 2016. I just wasn't certified yet, but 2017, 2018 is when I got certified and I started really doing it.
Okay. Now, that's around the time I started my security career. So I just remember 7 years ago was always 2017. So that's why I try to seem a little smart.
Yeah.
But so I know we glossed over the Cliff Notes version of your story, but before we get into kind of like your professional life, I want to ask, how was it that probably like that high school kind of transition into maybe saying, hey, I want to go to school, I'm going to do this and that. Like, how was that being a single parent so early on in life? Because I know it comes with its pitfalls of trying to figure out how I'm going to do all these different things.
I will say, if I didn't have my dad, and if I didn't see him working and like basically being the person I am now, I don't know how or if this would even be a thing. Coming out of high school, I had my son in high school, me just trying to enjoy what I could in high school, being a young mom and going to prom, and I got to do all that, and coming out being like, okay, like you're an adult, like what's next? And like I said, my dad, he's a DBA. He's the director, I always forget his title because he's retired now. He is in my realm of work. I would see him up late. I see his light underneath his door. We always lived really pretty well when I was a kid for him to be a single father. And so me being a single mother and seeing that I have this single father that is providing for us, we're living in the Hayward Hills, and it wasn't always that way. He went through some hard times too, but we almost had this very weird kind of kindred of a journey. It feels very parallel.
A lot of parallels.
Yeah. So me seeing him as a single parent able to do this, even though he went to Overland and finished and stuff, and I didn't have that particular piece, I knew I still had it in me. So it's okay, how do I get to that point? And so I wish I would have did the school route, but I went the work route. And I've talked to my brother about this. My brother went to 4 years of school. He has a degree in communications, and he always says that he wish he got the experience. And I always say, I wish I got the degree. Those journeys are, they have their own things with them. And I think that it's aligned to whatever journey you need it to be. It just worked out. And this is the way I needed to go. And if I didn't see him doing it, I wouldn't have known it was possible, which is what I think I was tweeting about. Like, I could have just copped out and been like, oh, I got this kid and it's so hard. Or I could be like, no, I've seen someone do this. Let me figure it out.
Fun question real quick. I just thought about something. Okay. If you were not going this route you were now, and you say, babe, let's say you don't know your dad is in tech. What job do you think you would have went that would have been like a career for you?
What you think you could have been? That's crazy you asked that now, because I'm trying to think of what retirement would look like and what like I want to do then. So, but no, you know what? If that wasn't it and it was something else, I want to help people. I've always wanted to help people, which is why it was either like medical or education. But okay. Also, I'm not going to hold y'all. I know that I like what I like. So education does not pay as much.
Yeah. I'd probably say at the school level, I think the people who go consult for school districts and all the stuff, they're the ones that get the bread.
Yeah. So I probably would have chose medical just because I like to feel like I'm doing something. I want to see the results of what I'm doing every day. So I probably
would have been like a nurse or something, or a counselor?
A nurse practitioner, probably something like that.
Yeah. You wouldn't have been able to tell you nothing. You can't tell a nurse with a good job nothing.
Listen, Anna Mama, you're not going to be able to tell me too much or anything. I can't be wrong. I'm a mom and a nurse.
But listening to you talk about your dad, it seems like you got the utmost respect for him. That just, it seems, and I know we talked about this before the call, and I can't remember if you even said it earlier because I was looking at some other notes. But you said, hey, they didn't know you had these big clothes on. It seems to me, and it's not me actually trying to be funny, but it seems to me like you were very aware of how hard your dad had to work and all this other stuff. And it maybe seemed like you didn't want to put like a burden or something on him or something based on
what? The older I get, the easiest way I can explain that is probably, yeah, I didn't want to burden them. Mm-hmm. I grew with my mom had her own kind of ailments when I was young, and I had to assist and take care of her. And I think I quickly realized, like, adults, even though they're parents, like, they're still people. And I knew he was already going through a lot. So it's crazy because when I went into labor... When I went into labor, I had a plan. I was like, if I make it to my mom's house, I can take my mom's car. I'll go to the hospital and I'll figure out everything later. Like, I had thought this through. I was like, I'm going to get a job. I'm going to figure this out. They're not going to have to do anything for me. And that did not happen at all. But yeah, I didn't want to burden them. And there was just a lot going on in the family as it is.
Right. I'm just thinking about just knowing what it takes to like have a kid and stuff like that. I'm like, I'm kind of like useless, like, driving yourself to appointments, and you had
Yeah, it was a lot of like, you take the bus home after school or something like that. Mm-hmm. They don't really think about you until dinner time. So you got like a window of time to operate and take care of or do what you need to do. And the only person that was really suspicious and on to me was my little brother. He was the one that was like, because he was around the most. So he was like, yeah. Well, something's going on. Yeah.
I think it's a little backyard against got a little meme. He's like, funny, not high, but funny, like weird. He probably was like that at the house.
Listen, when I went into labor, I was like, I need you to go tell dad. And he looked at me like I lost my damn mind. He was like, I'll go with you, but I'm not going to tell him. No, but no, he's a good brother.
Yeah. No, that's cool though, because I imagine, like I said, I took two little girls, now a little boy. And they see me in this room a lot with these lights on working. Well, a lot of times they sleep by that time, but they know I'm in here working or something in the office. Mm-hmm. So I can just imagine by the time I'm older and they probably get around your age, you're saying, yeah, I see my dad do all this different stuff. I see him on TV and doing this stuff. So I knew I could do this because my dad did it. And the only reason I'm segueing into that is because of my last episode that's out now. If you guys haven't watched it, check it out. My boy went from no experience to a cloud engineer. We talked about one of the reasons why a lot of us are not in these spaces is because of exposure, access. Like you said, hey, if I didn't see my dad, how would I know? a lot of Black kids don't see anybody doing that type of work, especially back then. That, yeah. Let me see if I'm decent at math. That was about 2001.
Yeah.
Look at me.
Yeah, you're right.
No, it wasn't 2001. 2003.
It was definitely through that time. Because
it's 03, because my little brother was born in 04 and he's 20.
Oh, you're talking about my son. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about something else.
No, I was just talking about like your age and everything. And I'm just thinking about way back then was different from like now. So you can see at least you now on here talking about it. So now your son will come back and watch this and your daughter may see it. And who knows? Your dad might even see it. He may want to come on the show and talk about being a single dad in tech and stuff.
Listen, he's got a very similar story to me, too. He started working at a company and they grabbed a whole bunch of people and were like, who wants to learn SQL? And it's all, you know, it's all downhill.
Yeah, I noticed the Black man, I believe like your dad probably around this age of those 50s, 60s area.
64.
Yeah, I worked with a guy at JP Morgan. He was a whiz at SQL.
They had all the scripts for him. Yeah, those companies, they used to have better programs and training programs for people back in the day.
Yeah, definitely. But I know we was on memory lane. I actually want to get briefly into, I know you said you kind of explained Salesforce. I know you said you can't really explain how you do it because you got so many different hats. But what would be like a typical day be like a Salesforce admin?
Yeah.
Oh, for you. We'll say for you.
Day. So it depends on the size of your org. I have about 315 users right now, but I have a pretty heavy tech stack. So my day-to-day changes, I'm in a 2-week sprint. Every 2 weeks I pull in projects and we get them prioritized with the business to make sure that it's aligned with the most important things that need to get done. Those are usually bigger projects that take about 2 to 3 weeks or longer to finish, and then work on those for the next 2 weeks. But also just, it could be someone that's locked out. It could be anywhere from a help desk kind of issue to a user's experiencing an error with something because there's a bug, or maybe there is a new release that came out and we didn't update something, so we need to fix that. It literally could be that something in the tech stack, that there's an emergency because there's some sort of data breach. Like, my day-to-day can look so different depending on what's going on because of the type of information that's being stored in Salesforce. It's pretty important to the business because everything is pumped into Salesforce. So it could be an integration. It could be a user issue. It could be a report request, which I'm just remembering the head of security asked me for a report and I did not get it to him. Or it could be a new integration. So it really depends. And that's part of the reason why I like my job. Every day I have to do something with user management because people are onboarding, offboarding. I try to automate a lot of the things that I have to do repetitively because what's the point of me managing it if I can do it like that? But it's a whole system. I'm managing a lot of different objects, people's access to it, and outside external platforms that touch it as well. And it goes from projects to smaller change requests.
Okay, look at you talking about 2-week sprints.
Yeah, I never would have thought that. I definitely thought I wanted to be a nurse. So to be here in this space is surreal. But I like to tell people, because I really eventually I want to give back, especially to young women who have kids, because the way that it changed my life to be able to go from making $50,000 to making like over $100,000 and just understanding that technically, like, you can be in a certain space, and if you have really good soft skills, like, that this is the kind of position that you can excel in. And it's crazy, and I just don't think people know that.
Yeah, and I actually was about to get in the next thing of asking you, what skills do you think someone should have? Let's say they don't even have, like you didn't really just have the background doing Salesforce at first, but if they wanted to get into it, should they get on Trailhead? What should they do?
You know what? There's definitely Trailhead. It depends on your learning style. I think if you're starting fresh out, you don't know about it, you're coming in net new, then you should get Trailhead. But having someone like visualize it and talk you through it is pretty important. So Mike Wheeler on Udemy has gotten so many people certified, and I like the way that he approaches explaining the foundation that you need to become an admin. And so I would recommend his Udemy course and Trailhead. And sometimes they even have Salesforce Saturdays. I know the pandemic had happened. That's another thing I really love about the space is that we have an Ohana kind of, that's what it's called. It's family kind of
methodology. There you go. Look. So, on Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah. And when I tell you Salesforce is great, I drank the Kool-Aid, but the amount of things that I can't maybe find documentation on and the amount of people in this space that are posting and helping and replying to people of, I don't know how to do this. Can you help me? I've never seen it before. And that's another piece of this that I love Salesforce. And I feel like anyone coming into tech that hasn't done tech can easily come into Salesforce, be supported, get a really good foundation of understanding like architecture and just data management, and then figuring out where you want to go from there. I think it's a wonderful stepping stone.
Yeah, perfect. I know I started laughing when I just thought about Lilo and Stitch. I don't know how to But one of the things I thought about when you were talking about Salesforce was the fact that all the information it has, and you were talking about these external parties that have access to Salesforce. And granted, this may not be your domain, but I'm assuming you may know a little bit about this. Do you work with any of the GRC people?
I'm actually going through a review right now to lock Salesforce down because notoriously it has been left open for people to have API access. And I'm trying to get that shut down with the GRC team right now. No one is going to like me after this because I'm going to lock down access and make it so you have to go through an approval process for anything that you want to be integrated with Salesforce, even if it's individual in nature. So, yeah.
Now, what's funny is, hey, they might be wanting you on the security team after this project.
You know what? I was going to ask you about how you got into security, because funny thing is, I'm segueing into a new role that incorporates some compliance and security pieces of it. And I've actually been getting pretty interested in maybe pivoting. So I want to see what other people feel about the space that they're in.
Yeah, I think I have the traditional story of a lot of people that's like around my age is, a lot of us didn't get to skip the help desk era. So I did this for 2 years at the beginning of my career. Then I worked in what you call a NOC, was a network operations center. That was like 6 months of 2016. And then that next year is when I got my first security job working for McAfee. And then I've been in security since then. And I was working as a SOC analyst, and I've been a SOC lead. I did incident management. I've did some GRC work as well, JP Morgan. And then now I'm back doing incident response at another company. But
what, yeah, out of all of that, what did you like the most though?
I like what I do now the most, but I like when I was doing more lead type work because I get to use a lot of my soft skills and I get to complete more projects versus being in the weeds all day. And that's cool sometimes too, but being able to fix the things that I see that are messed up, I like doing that better than some of the stuff I do on a day-to-day basis because I can do it like the back of my head to where it's like, you know what, I can fix this if y'all just let me do it. So that's how I feel. And the reason why I asked you that question is we've seen like all these different breaches happen this year. Mm-hmm. Like we just read about, so Avis Carvinal had a bad breach. We're trying to figure out if they're going to disclose what business application was it. But hackers got access to people's driver's license numbers, their phone numbers, their social security numbers, their address, emails.
What was this?
This is recent. Exactly. So that's another reason why the other part of this podcast exists. For that, for people like, hold on, hey, I was listening to the textual talk and they was talking about this breach that people didn't say anything about. So, yeah, that's the thing. Them people generated, and that's another thing that pissed me off. Let me see. Okay. I'm going to do this so I can cover up my stuff. But we covered at the beginning of the year that Change Healthcare, United Healthcare had a big breach. And so I saw that was on there. However, I'm like, I don't want no, I already got credit monitoring. I want money. Y'all make so much money. I want bread. I ain't do nothing at Avis, but I was like, they made like $12 billion last year. Get them people some money. That's the only thing that's going to change with regulations. Instead of giving us money to, hey, from now on, if you got a big breach and it's like X amount of people something, you need to say, hey, we're going to cut a check for $20,000, $50,000 to everybody affected. That's what y'all going to start doing. It's going to make y'all hire the staff y'all need to do what you're saying. Because think about it. If somebody exploited what you just said at your company, hey, this is y'all risk acceptance was this a long time ago, but this is something simple to fix. Most of the time, it's just something culture-wise, company-wise, people buy into, and they just didn't ask about it. And that's why a lot of times it takes either somebody new come in, they start poking around, hey, why they got all this access? And nobody's governing the access. Why can't I find any paper, what we call it, paper trails of people getting access to this?
That part.
And so now you don't know how long a person got access. And it's like all those different things come in and stuff got to be tied into there. Because then when you get out of it, it was like, of course, y'all should have had this and this done for security purposes.
And let me take it a step further, because I'm not going to get too conspiracy theory right now. But like the amount of jobs that could be created if we did have regulation like that, the amount of like committees that could be set up, like to employ people to check these things out, to keep them accountable, like stimulating but of course, we don't have that because the companies, like the oversight just isn't there. And if it is there, I feel like it's not unbiased. You know what I mean? So they're mm-hmm. not really doing what they need to do. It doesn't make sense to me that they even get away with stuff like this without doing what you're saying.
Yeah. It's truly ridiculous because outside of working, I also help people get into the field. And so you'll have these people that are studying, they want to get in the field, but then they can't because of these lofty expectations that certain companies have for them to get in. Yet the people that work there are pretty much trash. A lot of people that work there are trash. They just got the job because they was there at a certain time.
And or I've they knew that, somebody.
And I've said that so many times. And they ain't us. Like,
no. Oh, no.
The misconception, like they'll try to paint like black people not working, whatever. I will tell you, she will tell you, the people you're going to run into that sorry that's not doing work, it's not us. Most of us it's who not. Did get our jobs had to work so hard just to get it. We rarely just got a handout and say you can work for us, that we're always overachieving and yet still held to a different standard than the slackers.
I could tell you stories for days. It doesn't even make sense.
Trust me, I know. It
makes sense. And it's so audacious and in your face.
It definitely is. So you'll just be peeping game. Okay.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
I mess up World War III, but when they do it, they don't even say nothing.
Yeah. That's part of the reason why I'm realigning myself currently, because you really have to work for a company. If you're going to have these high expectations in tech and you're really going to give your all to a company and in that kind of expected way, I need to be aligned with your morals and you got to treat me the right way. I just can't do that anymore. I refuse. I'll work for myself before I do that again.
You already got the sauce to do it. I don't know what you're waiting on.
But I'm in the BI space. So business intelligence, think Tableau.
Okay.
World. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Check you out. Do you know how to use Tableau?
You know what? Tableau was never my favorite. The company that I'm with, I've given myself a crash course, which is that's how good the product is. And it's really dope. It's really dope being able to manipulate data like that. And that's the one thing I will say about Salesforce. I have a love hate, more love than hate, but the areas that I find being frustrated with Salesforce is in the reporting, certain things like that where you're restricted, and having a good visualization tool where you can stitch data together and show it it's just kind of dope. So I like the BI space.
Right. And that's the reason why, of course, Splunk can operate as a SIM, security incident event management tool. But they also, people love it because you can throw data at it and you can pretty much manipulate it and make custom reports of everything because it's...
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So Splunk is built off of, I guess it's built a little bit off of SQL, but their language is called SPL. But when you start looking at the search language, it's similar. Just SQL and KQL are very similar. So that's a lot of reasons why companies will go get Splunk because of that reporting feature and all the different stuff to do with it. Like when I started working in the NOC, we had... I at the time, I didn't even know it, but I was working in the PCI space and we had these dashboards that track different transactions. And if they went or something messed up for a certain company and it went wrong, that's when we were like it'd be an incident or something's going on. But we had these big Splunk dashboards that showcased that right on the wall. And every time they'd come through to show people. So, yeah.
I'm going to have to look into that. So along with security, I was trying to do a little bit more into data. So I need to expand. Not like I've hit a plateau or anything, but I feel like it's kind of time to add a little bit more dinner to the sauce.
Yeah. You laugh.
You do that every so often? Oh, what? Who?
Machiavelli.
Damn, Tupac?
You call it Tupac?
I don't know. Wait, are we on the same?
I didn't say. Old? Nah, I think y'all, you and her, maybe the same age. Not Machiavelli. On TikTok, her name is Machiavelli.
I don't get on TikTok.
Me and you talked about this, I think, when we first met.
No.
I think I brought up, like, either you sound like her a little bit or whatever. But no, that laugh, she do that same laugh on her TikToks.
Now I'm going to have to look. I'm slowly getting into TikTok. That's been like the last social media that I'm trying to like have going on my phone, but probably putting out some content too. So I'll check her out because now I'm curious what my laugh sounds like.
No, it's cool. It's funny. It's entertaining. But you're pivoting, you're working on GRC projects. And it seems like you got like you got a lot of tools. Like you are that whole quote that says, I want to say it's a master.
Oh, like a jack of all trades.
Yeah, a jack of all trades is better than a master of none. No,
it's a lot about, or you know a little about a lot of things or something. The whole quote is better than the piece that people like to highlight that makes it seem like, oh, like you're a little bit about a lot, but you're a master. But I want to say the whole quote itself is a little bit more balanced, like in what it's trying to convey. But I always wanted to get that tattoo because my name is Jack, or at least my family calls me Jack. And I feel like I know a little bit about everything.
Yeah, a jack of all trades is a master of none, but oftentimes it's better than a master of one. Yeah, there you go.
That part.
Yeah, they always just say a jack of all trades. The first part. Yeah, so that's what I thought about you and your role. Because you know what? I have a friend, and he is at a company, and they be making them do a whole bunch of different work. I say, bro, places I work at, the stuff you're doing would be dividends to different teams, and they know they're getting over. Because they're not paying you if you was doing all that work. And I always be like, man, listen, you need to get your bread. I was like, in no way possible, this role do less than you and get paid more. And you doing all this stuff for scraps.
My dad told me that was part of the reason. Another reason why I was like, okay, I feel like I've paid my dues. I've done the baptism by fire. I've thugged it out. And now we're going to take stuff off my plate. I feel like that's normal though. Don't you like coming into it, like having to take roles where you got a little bit more and you have to do it to get into the space or not?
I think it depends. If it's like a generalized term, like I have a client where he accepted a role that it's like a security admin. In my mind, I'm like, okay, this is going to be a generalized role where he's going to do multiple things and they're going to get their money out of it. And I know that because I have insight of what I know roles to be. I say, anytime a role is not specific, it's going to have you doing a whole bunch of crap. And I see that a lot of times with a system administrator, anything type of administration type of role, you're going to do many different things. However, the benefit of that is it can lead you into your niche.
Yep. That is, you are preaching right now. Okay. That's exactly true. And it's really important to make sure you have support for the products and for like best practices, all of that, especially in my world, because if your company has Salesforce and they just want you to do things quick and dirty and they don't care about supporting it, they are going to try to get it up out of you.
Yeah.
Star.
Yeah. But that's good though that you are getting ready to actually just work at more of a higher level and just hand stuff out to the PM or whatever. Cause you're like, look, I know what to do, but I'm not going to be doing everything. Cause ain't no way possible. You should have been doing identity access management and all the other stuff you were saying you was doing in your role. I'm like, she need a raise.
Listen, and the craziest thing is, and this is what kind of sent me, I will give you 150%. I try to do 2 years at every company, like really have a solid resume and not just jump around. But it was when one of our team members was offboarded and they had me absorb his duties. Didn't tell anyone that I was doing it, let people just bombard me with requests, didn't set any type of boundaries, didn't support me in it, and then moved that role, gave it to someone else on the team that manager had hired, like directly, like just was making decisions and announced it, was like, y'all give him time to adjust. And I was like, oh, is that the game we're playing? Like, okay. And that's when I realized, yeah, no, we can't do this. We can't. They are very audacious. Let's say that.
Yeah. They're only like most places I got a friend, he just finished up leaving Ernst & Young and he's working somewhere else. And I know he wants to say a lot every time we would be on the show, but he's holding his tongue. I'm like, the company's going to know who to play with and who not to play with. One or two things going to happen. You're going to set that boundary and they ain't going to play with you like that, or they're going to just try to get you out of there. Like, either one will happen, but it's not, you're not going to abuse and use me up just because I work for you, or I should be happy that I work for you. Because that's the other thing is, oh yeah, you should be happy. Mm-hmm. Work with, especially if it's a company that's been around for years and their name is illustrious. They'll feel like you should be so happy and honored you should work for them, which, like, I'm glad you give me a job, but this is a two-way relationship. I perform a service for you, you pay me. It's not all one way. and that's what people don't understand. And they also don't understand that if you want to keep great employees, treat them right. If you're going to say, okay, you're going to absorb this, hey, you know what? We need to talk to HR about raising your money up because your responsibility has changed. This level of scope of work you're doing has changed. But if they don't do that and they think, oh, you're just supposed to do it because we tell you to, that's not going to fly, especially with people who are still young enough. They're like, okay, I got you. Watch this. I'm still going to do my job, but you're not going to see it coming when I be gone. It's going to be coming in a dire time and you're going to be mad and you're like, dang it. We should take care of them.
Listen, and when I tell you, it's very important to interview back. That's what I will say, because I, in this most recent kind of journey of looking for a new role, I am glad that I took the time that I did, because I found a company that was very aligned with the kind of like support and collaborative culture I want to work in. And you do not have to accept anything. You just don't. I want to say, when I was first looking to leave my old company before I came and was working for the company that I'm about to leave now, I had already crest over 100,000 and I was interviewing with this company that wanted me, and they were like, oh, we'll pay you like 160,000. I'm like, what? But on the call, it was red flags everywhere. It wasn't diverse. It wasn't collaborative. It was going to be a very kind of tight role where I was going to be held to certain KPIs. And I could just tell it wasn't aligned with me. And even though that was a lot of money, I turned it down. And I guarantee you, what's not for you, don't just take it to do it. Take your time, because you'll always get what you deserve if you take your time.
No, I agree. And I'm glad that you put a number out there. I have a video that's been circulating and blowing up. It's almost 2 years old. I did it when I quit the last company. And I didn't make it till after I had been working at the current company for a while. And it's like, I quit my 175K job, whatever. And people are being so nosy. Oh, what's the company name? Was that all bonus or was that base or whatever? What? It doesn't matter. I guess it's to some people it matter. Like I told some people, I guess, the base amount or whatever in the comments. But the thing is, now people watching this, some people are going to say, I would have took it. Like, it's the money, a job's a job. Then there are the people that say, hey, I need to be able to make what I want to make, but also what I'm doing. Yeah. And so I posted a comment from the video the other day on my story. A dude said, before even watching the video, you crashing out. I was like, how am I crashing out, sir? And his next comment was like, he said, you know what? I watched the whole video and you taught me a valuable lesson. Thank you. I'm just like, all you got to do is watch it. I swear. Like, of course, it's meant for you to click on, but I was like, you can't say and just hate on the video without watching it. That's what like a lot of people do in the comments. Like, they get up in arms about the title, but I'm like, I did it, so you'll watch it. I was like, of course, you may not agree with everything I say, which I don't expect you to, but it is what it is. But the people that know, it's like, hey, if you're taking it just for this, you don't like it. So let's say you did take the job that you didn't like with the red flags. It might have prevented you from being able to make $350,000 for $100,000.
That part.
And people don't see that part. And that's why I was like, if I feel like a job wasn't contributing to what I need to do for the rest of my career, then I don't care what I'm getting paid. It's probably going to plateau me. Because you also get sometimes, if you stay in the role too long, you don't learn, you go to handcuff. Now it gets super hard to leave when you're interviewing. It gets tough. I say this, you're experiencing your field, I'm experiencing my field. There's no problem pretty much getting interviews as a person who's been in a decade into their career. I would assume that's the same way for you.
It's, and at different times it speeds up or speeds down, but it's never been a problem at this point.
Yeah, because I always tell people, I say, it's cool, but the market ain't as bad for people with experience. It's worse for entry-level, mid-level people because of that's who they're all competing with. But I was like, a lot of jobs still don't have senior, principal, and above people to do the jobs. That's why those people are still winning right now. A lot of us, and I don't know how long you've been on Twitter. I don't know if you've actually been involved in Black Tech Twitter over the last 3-4 years. But there were the subset of us who've been here for a while. We used to try to tell people, hey, just be careful and look for the red flags and stop listening to some of these people who just got in, because they generally don't have enough experience to tell you some things yet.
Yep.
And a lot of them had to learn the hard way because we got called haters and all this other stuff. Like, what a benefit we got to hate on y'all. I'm not the type to get mad at somebody. Matter of fact, I help people not have to do help desk so they can go straight into a security role. I'm not the type of person.
No, keep going.
I'm not that type of person. There are people that are like that. That's what prevented a person like me having more qualifications than some people not being able to get in years ago because it was gatekept from me. But I'm not going to gatekeep it from you because I know how important diversity is on a team, especially with security.
Yeah.
People just pay attention to people's backgrounds, but not only your background, but your personal background shapes on how you view things at that job from a security wise. And that's why having a diverse team actually benefits a lot of companies, and the companies with a good diverse team most of the time tend not to have the breaches and everything else because there's just certain things that other people don't really pay attention to. Some people may be, they probably will stay home and don't lock their door, or they're the type of people, I'm pretty sure Black people was the people that worked at a company and said, hey, we should make something in cars to let you know when something is sitting in the seat or when it's left in it, because a lot of these people is leaving their kids in the cars and they dying.
You know what? I could definitely see that. Or it being coming from more parents than other people. And that's part of like diversity too. You know what I mean? Which I don't think people think a lot of. But it goes to my old boss. He did a really good job about hiring a diverse team. People from different backgrounds. Green people. A little more seasoned people. But I think in tech, you also just need to be green across the board. Wherever you go when you start new jobs. Not to bring old habits to it. And be a little open to new things. But yeah, no. Diversity is really important, and I hate the conversations that I see going on online right now about DEI and stuff. It really annoys me, but we won't even go into that.
No, we should.
Unless
we should.
You want to, because
we should. My latest episode, and it comes from a snippet of something in the episode where like the title is DEI is the new N-word, and it came from something from LinkedIn. I like that. And it's actually a pretty good episode, but
I need to watch that one.
On that episode, a dude said, I think I need to go find a comment because I thought it was stupid. It was like a short-sighted comment because I don't think they're getting the whole picture. He said, where was it? DEI is basically saying there's too many white folks. That's just my opinion, which I think is short-sighted because I don't think it, when you say it's like that, you try to lump it in with being like affirmative action, and DEI is not affirmative action.
Yeah.
DEI just trying to make sure, hey, these qualified applicants of other races and ethnicities, they get a shot at least interviewing for these roles.
Yeah.
And maybe there is, and like I said, I don't know, I'm back in on HR wise, maybe there is, and say, hey, we need to have this type of diverse team. So we make a quota, but not in a quota as in just to hire somebody that's qualified.
Yeah. So,
I think that's where it comes from. Because I'm going to tell you, not a client, but he got laid off from his job last month. And I've been helping him like try to get interviews and stuff like that. And he was telling me how a friend of his got the same job that he's qualified to do, but the hiring manager don't want to hire Black folks. And he's like said it, and he's also said stuff, I think, to like some of the Indian people. And so the guy's pretty much a prick. And that bias just showed up. And I told him, I said, if y'all have evidence that can support that, y'all can report that company and their hiring practices and get them out of there.
Yeah.
Because should nobody have to do that or go through interviews knowing that you're not going to pick them just because you don't even want that certain people to work there? Like, that's crazy. But that's one of the things, like, companies will never say that. It's always going to be some BS reason why they didn't hire you. But a lot of people that in that minority range, like when I think when the, I don't know what the numbers come to in tech, but I think the numbers may be, I know in cybersecurity, it's 7 to 8% of Black people are like in cybersecurity. It was a super low amount.
I looked for Salesforce too, because I think it was like 45-50% is white and like mostly white males. And then the rest is minority people. And I think Black people in my age group is like the same 7-8%. It's not a lot of us.
And I get it. But at the same time, what makes it tough is that, like I said, until the tables were reversed, people don't understand the feeling of going through so many panels, interviews, and you hopefully maybe even seeing one Black person, let alone none. Mm-hmm. And so you just, is this an implication? Is this kind of tell me about how the company is? Like, y'all not rocking with us like that or what? I'm the type of person, if I know I'm interviewing some Black people, I'm going to try to have a Black person that's on a team or something in a company to at least be in some type of panel to make somebody feel comfortable. Because sometimes you just do not feel comfortable. You feel
No. You're right. I was just thinking because like currently the company that I interviewed, there was no one diverse on the panel. But because I think everybody was aligned with the mission of the company, I didn't feel like I couldn't say yes to this offer. I felt like I would be okay. But the company that I was talking about, like out the gate when I was looking to leave my like other company, the panelists, it was not the same vibe. It was very clear, like, you guys don't have enough diversity in the culture of your company, and I can feel it in the interview, and I'm not rocking with that. So there's different, and I was going to ask you that, if you feel like the more time that you have in this realm, that the easier it is for you to go into those spaces when it isn't diverse, as long as like the culture feels welcoming, because I'm getting there now where it's like, when I first started off, imposter syndrome was real. I needed to see people that look like me because you coming into tech and imposter syndrome, that's not a joke, sitting in those rooms with those people. So I'm just curious how you felt about it. Now I feel like it's hit or miss. Like it comes sometimes for sure, but I'm more comfortable if I were to walk in a room and not see a lot of me and be okay.
Yeah, I think it's both. It's like a mix of, because like when you have diversity, then you have people at the top that cares about the people there, or certain holidays they may care about, or different things, or knowing, hey, these people may be dealing with this, so we need to probably set up this ERG group or whatever. Mm. All these different things that they try to set up to help people out. Like even the current place I'm at, my year one, I went to a conference, people that was a certain level at the company in Florida, and it was pretty cool. First best experience I probably like ever had just at a company, because it was pretty interesting. And like even at the top of the org is a Black woman. So that was a shocker to me, because that's what I always look at. I always look at, if I'm going to stay somewhere alone, what's the org chart? Does a person like me have a chance of moving up? If I don't typically see that, sometimes it's okay. I could just be playing myself or seeing, but what does it take? And I'm also not a kiss up type of person. So that's why a lot of times I probably wouldn't move up either, because I'm not going to kiss up to you. Yeah. I don't really care too much about that.
And it doesn't even make a difference, I think, sometimes. It's just a waste of energy. We can't do that. Okay. Yeah. I definitely feel that.
And I actually want to ask you this too. I asked a couple of women this before about, I had one of my, and that episode hadn't been edited yet, but we were talking about her being a single mom and interviewing. How is that? Do you feel like certain companies won't hire single moms because they feel like they probably always got to do something for their kids and they're always about to be off and all these other things? Is that a thing that sometimes you get a feeling for sometimes? Or, because think about it, most people presume that the woman has custody of the kids. So the man don't technically go through that, and they could have custody.
Yeah, you know what? I definitely have felt it. I want to say someone's even asked me in early interviews before I really was in tech of, are you going to be able to do this job because you're a mom? And I was like, yeah, I have support. I have family and stuff like that. And then I started baking that into my interviewing of letting people know I was a mom, but that I had support. And thinking about it now, it's like, when did that happen? But I would just start saying it because I just would start assuming that people would think I couldn't do the job or that it would take away. And I think I'm pretty balanced, like, of being able to see both sides. I think I read something of the amount of time that, yeah, we do have to take away, like, to go tend to children. But, like, the kind of, like, work personality I have, I work into the night. I saw my dad do that. So it's, I'll go handle my kids, get dinner, and then be up till 2 o'clock in the morning doing the work, because I'm like, that's how I am about what the things that I commit to. But yeah, it's definitely present. In the job I have now, it feels like it depends on who's interviewing, who's going. I feel like as a mom, like, you can read people and you know who you need to make feel more comfortable with it than other people. I definitely can read the room pretty well on that one. So yeah, it's hard, but I think that's where your soft skills have to come in, so people understand, like, what you're capable of, so they know that even if you were taken away from it, like, you're on top of your shit.
Yeah. And speaking of soft skills, I forgot, because actually some soft skills actually do have names. Do you know the names of some of your soft skills, or you just got them?
You know what? I'm not really good at this, but I will say that something that came up for me recently that I think people should investigate is, it's called this predictive index test. And I did it for a job interview a long time ago. I was probably like 18, 20. I think it's really good to take into interviews, as long as it's positive, your results are positive. But it breaks down, like, who you are as a worker and, like, how you approach work and things like that. And it's really, it goes in depth. It was amazing. But soft skills wise, communication is super important. Empathy. I think being a mom, those soft skills of, like, in tech.
Patience,
being able to deal with someone that doesn't understand what you do, or, like, the technicalities behind it, being able to, like, yeah, do that. That's a gift. Time management. I think making people feel comfortable in you facilitating this work, that's the biggest thing I can say, is if you want to sum it up, because the more comfortable I can make someone feel in my capabilities and me getting this project done, the smoother my job is. And so that's what I come in with, making people feel good, making sure they have visibility. If people don't have to ask a lot of questions, they feel pretty good. So those are, like, the biggest soft skills for me. And I think that it goes really granular into, like, different things that are important. And we could talk forever about that. But another thing is, I think, is really important, and for me as a mom, of what I realized in tech, is that understanding being my boss's right hand man, it's that got me so far. I had a boss that was in high level meetings. We're on this rocket ship ride, like, we're the only two admins. Me understanding him and how he thinks and what's important to him, and coming to meetings already ahead of it, when you understand what someone wants before they want it, because temp checking everything, like, that's a big soft skill. And I don't even know what to call that, but you can be ahead of the curve just a couple steps. It does wonders.
Yeah. While you were talking, I found, like, some of the soft skills were, like, adaptability, critical thinking, leadership, problem solving, patience, dependability, organization, enthusiasm.
Ooh.
Giving feedback, interpersonal skills, decision-making, emotional intelligence. That's one I always bring up in interviews. Teamwork, creativity, listening. So yeah, you're right. You're right on it. And I think for most people, they just need to figure out, like, how they apply those things. Or what I tell people is, I don't like when people list these in the skills section, because, like, we need these for technical skills. I was like, we can show these soft skills in our bullets on our work experience, or you can showcase them during an interview. That's how I typically tell people we can do with these soft skills. So we don't want to waste space. It's people not looking for the team player and the problem solver. Show how you solve the problem in one of your bullets versus telling us, like, show and not tell.
No, that it goes such a long way when you have a good story and you can walk someone through how you solved it, and they can see that enthusiasm is big when people know that you're excited about what you do, because they know that you're going to try your best. Like, it goes, it's a big one for me.
Yeah. Is giving excited. So I wanted to ask you this. What are, like, a couple things that you thought I would have asked you that I didn't ask you?
Worky stuff, like, of, like, the kinds of, like, projects that I do. I figured we would definitely go into day to day, but, like, maybe some of the bigger impacts that I have to the business, hard it is to become an admin, maybe.
Yeah, you know what? Because you made it seem easy. So I was like, it's probably easy for her. Let's talk about that then. Let's talk about, is it hard to become an admin based on nobody with no experience? I guess I should have followed up on that when I asked about how to get into Salesforce.
because I used Salesforce and I thought it was cool, I think that's why it was a little bit easier for me. But it's, I think anyone can, as long as they can understand the foundation of what it is, that it's like this big kind of master Excel sheet of a company's data, and that you get to build declaratively. It's not you coding, you can code, but it's a lot of clicks, and it's just you understanding how the system works. And if you can understand the foundation of how the system works and stay up to date on all the features and the things that are changing, that's like the baseline of being an admin, is understanding the product and how to leverage it for your business. So you have a B2B business, a company selling a SaaS product to other businesses. You want to know who those companies are, who we contact there, all of our deals, are we billing them? All of that lives in Salesforce. And then you're just building out processes. So it's, I think it's hard for me to conceptualize for people sometimes because I've just been doing it so long, but it's not hard to learn. You just have to translate it the way you need to, because we all do it every day. When you go on Instagram and you're clicking on different things and you can search for this and that, that's all Salesforce is, just for a business. And if you think about it like that, then it's okay, I get the idea. Now you just need to understand how everything talks to each other. And it's so big that you can never really learn anything, which, like, everything. That's why we have the Ohana community and everyone tries to take care of each other. There's 3 releases every year. So new things come out. Once you get certified, you have a tiny test that you have to, like, make sure that you stay up to date with the key features that have been released. It's not hard. But essentially, I don't think it's hard for most people. I think that they just have to really want to understand it and find a class that works for them. Taking the test, I think you just need to get like a 60% or 65%. And once you pass that, getting some experience out the gate, that's probably the hardest thing. And I think we already talked about that.
Okay. And then I guess the next one would be, what type of projects should they try to have on their resume to showcase their understanding or knowledge level of Salesforce?
You know what? I think right now it's about like data and how you handle it and how you interpret it and how you're going to scale the business. Understanding like those kinds of things, like in getting, let's see. I got my brother certified. Well, I didn't get him certified. He got himself certified. But you can be a junior administrator. Junior administrator jobs are few and far between, but when they're out there, you can do it. Another good way to get into the space is going into sales operations. If you learn sales operations for any business, you can translate that into being a Salesforce administrator, because ultimately we usually fall underneath revenue or sales or underneath like the board or something, depending on how they're, it's always about the money. So if you understand sales ops, and if you can manage that, you can definitely transition into being a Salesforce administrator. I think that is the best way in my mind of how someone that doesn't have any experience can do it. And you can be an administrative assistant, you get into being a sales associate, go into sales operations, now you get your administrator license and you can start taking those kind of Salesforce jobs.
Cool. So I guess the next question is obvious. Are you taking any mentees right now?
You know what? I was on the board for the organization that I went through to get certified, and it was something that I really enjoyed doing. I was a Salesforce trainer. I've been trying to get back into it. So this was like my kickoff of getting back into the give back space. And this was my reminder that I need to do that. So I have done it in the past. And with me transitioning into this new role and getting more space there, I do think that I'd be getting back on board. I probably would want to do it, kick it off January 2025. But yeah, I'm always open for people to hit me up and to ask about Salesforce and for us to talk it through and for me to support anybody that wants to move forward in that realm.
Got it. So people, you can reach out about Salesforce. My guys, keep it about Salesforce. All the extra stuff.
Yeah.
They be extra for real. They really do be trying to find y'all from this show.
Is I might have to start charging. Hey, I was going to tell all my business. And I'm not going to tell my business. I'm not going to tell my business. But yeah, y'all be safe. Don't be
She looking for somebody that got the low cut Caesar with the deep waves. That's what she looking for. A country boy.
I am. Okay, there you go. That one resonates. I'll take that.
And if your status ain't hood, she ain't looking for a man to be street. If you're looking for me, she need a soldier that's going to take care of me.
Thank you for that laugh, because I needed that quite a bit. But yeah, y'all be safe in them DMs. Just be safe.
Yeah, man. Don't be listening to Gotti, because Gotti told me to go down to DMs, which he does.
She's treating Angela pretty good.
Yeah, I think she'd be doing too much, but that's just me.
I don't want to hate her. She's just a little corny. I don't want to hate her.
I know she's making money from the stuff, but it just seemed like it just be seemed like it's lame.
The Cheeto incident, I don't endorse it at all. I'm a girl's girl, so.
We see. So we just told them to be mindful on Twitter, but where can they follow you at?
I am on Twitter. My page is down. It's locked right now on Twitter and Instagram because we are in the interviewing process. We got to keep my tweets under wraps just until we get through the background process. That's just how I like to play it. But I do have a Twitter, I do have an Instagram, and I am on LinkedIn. I will be more on TikTok. I'm going to be working on some Salesforce related posts there. But yeah, that's me right now.
Perfect, perfect. And so, guys, this is what I plan to do, and Jackie doesn't even know this yet, but I'm planning to do probably like a live stream. I don't know when, but we'll probably make it about Salesforce. That way we can do a Q&A. So I don't know if you know who Kim Barnes is, but
that name sounds very familiar.
But yeah, she's really good at Salesforce too. So I'm thinking about maybe having a couple of y'all on there, because that's not my forte. I would just host it and just have the people come through. That way they can learn about Salesforce and also expand your brand some.
So. I love that. Thank you for this. Yeah. Is my formal invite.
Yeah, it is. And watch how many people watch this afterwards. You're like, the DMs won't stop. But
don't scare me now.
That's cool. But for y'all that tune in, I appreciate y'all for always rocking with me and keep up with us. Get on the Patreon, support the channel. Got some big things in store. Y'all going to be seeing like some more great content coming up your way. But like I always say, until next time, let's stay textual, and we out. Peace.